Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 47. We're a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer Otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are...
Hi, I'm Dylan.
Hey all, I'm Mike.
Hey, I'm Nick.
And I am your host this evening, Sam. This episode is being recorded on March 7th, 2024, and we are discussing Shin Godzilla, and there will be spoilers for everything, so yeah, if you don't want that, turn it off. And with that, let's get into it. Before we get into it, Dylan... You had some stuff you wanted to talk about from our previous show, the winter season stuff. What did you want to talk about?
Nothing of importance, just that Bravern is the first series I think I've ever seen to do waterboarding. So there's waterboarding in there. And then in a later episode, there is more waterboarding, and somehow they made it probably the funniest thing I've seen in anime in quite a long time. I lost it. I was watching the episode going for like a run on my treadmill, and I almost damn near fell over. So Bravern is not disappointed. Also, unrelated to that entirely, this episode will probably not be out in time, but End of Evangelion is in theaters on March 17th and March 20th, 2 days only. And I felt actually pretty awesome because I was playing at one local theater in the Buffalo, New York area, and originally they just had a 4 p.m. show on Sunday, and then that show pretty much sold out, so they made a 4:30 show. I got tickets for that one, and then that one got pretty well sold out, so now they have like three shows on Sunday. Wow. Which I'm like, man, that's motivating. Dang. I like that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
wow. Buffalo anime fans represent.
When I got my ticket, it was pretty full. I haven't checked to see if they've added any more showings, but yeah, I was sandwiched between two groups of people, so
so I'm looking seeing, forward to that. Yeah, seeing that I'm beyond, like, it's just one of those things. I'm beyond excited. Like, literally, I've had like nearly weekly thoughts for probably the last 20 years or so of like, man, I really want to see End of Eva in theater. Like, it's been my number one most wanted to see theatrical movie that I've ever seen, and I'm so beyond excited. So
yeah, dream come
true,
man.
I'll pass on the mic from there.
Yeah. Definitely encourage people to see it if this comes out in time. But otherwise, too bad, so sad. Buy the Blu-rays. Nick, you had something you wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Crunchyroll.
Speaking of too bad, so sad. Yeah, so any goodwill that the last year's Crunchyroll Anime Awards built has been burnt to the ground this year, because for anybody who's taken a look at their grand winners for 2024, it is completely and utterly dominated by Jujutsu Kaisen, which frankly shocked me. I feel like it's perfectly fine for it to qualify for a handful, but really, anime of the year? When it was up against, let's see here, what was it up against? It was against Oshinoko Bocchi, yeah, the Rock, Chainsaw Man, Demon Slayer Season 3, and Vinland Saga Season 2, which out of continuing seasons, I feel like Vinland Saga Season 2 was like super, super highly touted. Demon Slayer Season 3 was fine, probably the weakest season, but still strong. But I mean, we're up against amazing shows, and somehow Jujutsu Kaisen took home the gold, which just goes to show that it's just basically some sort of weird MAL popularity nonsense, because I don't see how it could win so many categories and beat out so many other completely deserving shows, except for the fact that it's Jujutsu Kaisen. It's like basically this generation's Naruto, which, good for you guys. I'm glad there's something that a lot of people want to get behind, but let's be real, it is not that innovative. It is not that good, guys. Come on, let's reward some original, you know, like real effort for making some original content here.
So how do they choose? Do we know how they choose these?
Don't know. I think it's voted on plus some sort of panel voting, but I mean, let's be real.
Oh my goodness.
It's
look at these categories.
How does voting work? Let's hear. They've partnered blah 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 blah, as in two rounds of voting. In round one, a panel of judges determines the six nominees in each category. In round two, the same panel votes alongside fans to help determine a grand winner in each category.
So it is what I suspected. So yeah, I mean, and that kind of is the shows. I mean, best original anime went to Buddy Daddies when, once again,
yeah, I thought that was weird.
It's up against Akiba Maid War, Mobile Suit Gundam, Witch from Mercury. I think Akiba Maid War limped in because it was like a January show or something.
Oh, yeah, right.
Birdie Wing Season 2, so I'll give it that. Season 2 wasn't good as Season 1. Do It Yourself and the Marginal Service. But again, I just am kind of in disbelief. There's some that I think made sense, like Best Anime Song went to Idol, which is perfectly deserving of it.
But come on, that deserved more categories.
Yes, I believe it does. Yeah. You know, it's just, I was really just flabbergasted at how, I'm okay with some of these things getting kind of selected, but like, where was the one that really kind of triggered me, even beyond Jujutsu Kaisen? Where was it? Let me see, sorry, scrolling here. Best Continuing, One Piece, yeah, sure, everybody watches One Piece, that's fine.
Yeah, that's a totally thing to have, like, if they want to have that, have like, several like best continuing like things. Don't
Here we go. Best Animation went to Demon Slayer Season 3, Swordsmith Arc, and in my opinion, this was one of the weakest seasons for animation because this was the first time they heavily integrated CGI. So I don't understand how this got in. When if you're talking about integrating CGI well, it was up against Mob Psycho 100 Season 3 and Chainsaw Man, both of which, in my opinion, did CGI way better.
And Mob Psycho, I mean, just at raw animation, I think, is way better, nonstop.
I can agree there. So, again, I just don't understand what kind of judging really went on here. I this time, I feel like there's a strong Crunchyroll bias because, you know, a lot of these other shows that were nominated were on other platforms, and we were joking last year that, oh, it's gonna be, you know, only CR anime, and surprisingly they actually, you know, had a lot of non-CR anime on there, like Cyberpunk Edgerunners. I think Cyberpunk Edgerunners ended up taking show of the year last year, if I recall. But in any case,
I will say though that the bigger problem does seem to be, I mean, I say problem in quotes, but Jujutsu Kaisen, which just happens to be a Crunchyroll thing, right? So
right,
if it wasn't taking everything, you might see a bit more variety, you might see more the idol Oshinoko. Yeah they have a weird idea of what drama is though with Attack on Titan. I guess that's not what I would call drama.
I would not call Attack on Titan drama, but you know, whatever. I've kind of gotten jaded. If it's not obvious from my tone of voice, I'm pretty jaded to all this again. So stuff like this is why I kind of avoid any sort of, you know, popularity anything with anime, because I mean, honestly, stuff like this is largely why I wanted to start this podcast, even, because we can discuss things that I think are actually have merit to discuss versus the thing that everybody is watching already. So,
yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's my soapbox for the day. Thank you for your time. And yeah, all your opinions suck.
Excellent.
Yeah. I mean, best, I don't know. I feel like of their, I don't know. I just think clearly the answer to all of this is that our podcast just needs to get popular enough that we become voting members for the Crunchyroll Awards.
I almost don't want that to happen, frankly.
And then we'll just go back and retroactively just vote for Bocchi the Rock, like,
yes,
like every year. Be like, look, it should be Bocchi. Why not?
Yeah. Because
you're going to do some cooler animation than Bocchi
in 2028. Oh, like, man, guys, you're like, but Dylan, it aired in 2023. I don't care. It's still the best show. Yeah. 5 years later.
Yeah, you're like, who's done cooler animation than?
Oh man, than so creative. So creative.
Yeah.
At least it did win a handful. Like, it won Best Slice of Life, which, you know, I suppose that's what it can be pigeonholed into. Suzume did win Best Film, which, again, pretty well-deserving.
What were the choices, even?
Black Clover.
Suzume, and I guess probably the first Slam Dunk is supposed to have been pretty good.
Sure. I see.
I didn't even know there was a Psycho Pass movie, but apparently there was.
Yeah.
And
a Black Clover movie. So, three movies that are like redone things of TV series. One original movie. I don't know Blue Giant.
Maybe that
could be cool. I don't know that one at all. So maybe that one might actually be cool. And then first Slam Dunk, which is, you know, it's a redo of a manga of a very popular thing. I think it was actually supposed to have been pretty good, but.
That's what I hear.
But, you know, it still is like, well, it's a redo of a manga of a thing. It's not an original story made for film.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
And it's Slam Dunk, which isn't exactly new, though it is long running, isn't it? Or.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's very over.
Quite over, but it goes back well into the 80s. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remembered it being, like, not at all a new series when I read some in Raijin Comics, which tells you how long ago that was.
Oh, yeah.
20 years? Was it, like, AX03 that they released issue 0 of that or something?
That sounds about right.
Might have been. So the manga ran from October of 1990 to June of 1996.
No, so not quite the 80s.
Yeah, not quite the 80s.
Just barely not the 80s, yeah.
Man, Takahiko Inoue. Man, that dude has made so many huge mangas.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. It is crazy how many huge mangas he's done.
I think he qualifies for, like, living treasure status in, like, the anime manga sphere.
Yeah.
Along with, like...
What? Maybe actually... You know, actually, it's not as many. It's less than I thought. It really... I thought he had done a bunch more, but just looking at Wikipedia, it's really... It's like... The big ones is Slam Dunk and Vagabond.
I was about to say Vagabond is also probably, I mean, but...
Oh, yeah.
But to even make two...
That's true. To make two that are like...
That define, you know, genres. Yeah. Like, Slam Dunk is regularly referred to as the original hot sports manga. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. And then he kind of... And then Vagabond is just so insanely cool and good.
Didn't he basically give up on it, though? Like, he, like...
It says it's on hiatus. It might be one of those things where he just kind of stopped.
That could be a topic worth deep diving for a future episode.
Yeah.
On hiatus.
Okay. So, Shin Godzilla. Quick background. Written by Hideaki Anno, directed by Hideaki Anno and Shinji Higuchi. It was the first of the Shin series, released theatrically July 29th, 2016 in Japan, and it grossed $78 million worldwide, according to Wikipedia.
Which made it like the highest grossing Godzilla film until Godzilla Minus One, which is pretty good.
Which just came out, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I don't know how many they've had since then. Have they had a lot?
No, not a lot of Japanese. I don't know if they've. I'm sure there's been a few that we haven't been aware of, but yeah.
So I want to start on what to me is. So since I watched Godzilla Minus One recently, I don't know, Dylan, you watched it. Did Nick and Mike, did you watch Godzilla Minus One?
I didn't end up watching it yet, but
I have
feel
not.
Free to spoil if you want to.
No. So I think I commented on it in the Discord about how I didn't really like the way Godzilla looked. In this one, I actually liked the way Godzilla looked. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and compare them more. But I don't know. I liked also the kind of evolution the design has as the movie goes on.
Yes, that's probably one of my favorite elements was how they had him evolve in like real time. I thought that was a really cool.
Yeah. I definitely didn't like the way Godzilla looked at first, but then once I understood what they were doing with it, then I thought it was awesome.
You know, it's interesting because at first I was thinking, like, is this supposed to be Godzilla, or are they already doing like the kaiju versus kaiju thing and they're gonna have it appear later? And then that section where you see it kind of rear up and you know, you see the gills contract and the spines come out, like, oh, they're going with this route. That's really interesting. And
yeah, I kind of had that same thought the first time I watched it. I'm like, oh, this isn't Godzilla, this is some weird like chicken wing kaiju.
Yeah, I gotta say, that's when I, you know, when they were doing a lot of the close-ups of that version of that, you know, first version of Godzilla, and like, you know, it was clearly CGI, but they made it, they emulated the way it kind of jiggled and moved like it was a, like a rubber suit really well, in my opinion. Like, I really got into the design decisions they made for it at that, like, pretty early on. I was like, okay, I'm on board. I got, at first I was really unsure of how I was going to feel about it. And then, like, when they did the whole, yeah, when it starts to evolve, I'm like, okay, you got, like, I did the whole, there was a whole meme. I was kind of leaning back in my chair. And then when, like, it caught my interest, I leaned forward and my, like, elbows were on my knees. And I was, like, really, like, invested in the movie at that point.
Yeah, I've had the exact same experience where, yeah, I was like, oh, is this like a goofy monster? And then, like, yeah, it stands up. It's like, oh, this is cool. My only complaint is I did not like the googly eyes. Like, I get what they were doing there, but it made it fit way worse. For some reason, that made it look a lot like a toy.
I think that's what they were going for at first, though. I liked it only because, like, once you saw the second version and you saw how the eyes became very menacing, I'm like, oh, now you know it's serious. Like, you realize they done effed up, and by letting it go, you know, into this stage when they didn't realize that it was, you know, dynamically evolving.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I'm thinking of, like, a lot from the perspective of, like, I'm always pretty anal about CG and stuff, and I actually think that the CG in this was pretty dang good, other than a few parts, minor complaints, but like I was like scrutinizing stuff and like the lighting matched really well, like, and sometimes it even felt like they were purposefully, like Nick, you mentioned how this suit kind of jiggled some, I felt like they were purposefully making things look like models at times.
Yep.
And maybe sometimes it was a model. I don't know, but either way, they did a great job with that. I think that was a.
They said it was all, at least according to Wikipedia, which this podcast we just assume is truth.
yes.
but no, they said it was all CG, and they had experimented with like kind of partial suits and like partial CG and stuff, and in the end, they decided to go with full CG
and mocapping, right?
Yeah, yeah, oh. And actually the actor who played Godzilla is actually like a pretty well-known, like a pretty good quality, like stage actor.
Yeah.
Which is kind of
really
funny.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah, he's a person who's won like awards and stuff for like good acting and things like that.
I can only imagine him having him writhe around on his belly for the first cuts. And just...
Yeah, I would like to see the mocap footage for this.
I thought, yeah, that whole part of it was so cool. I it wasn't until I had to, you know, start thinking about analytical. I'm like, yeah, that really set the movie for me. And the rest of it, like the rest of it was, well, it was fine. I think it was perfectly fine. But that for me, it was how they set it up early was really kept me invested in it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And with that setup there too, there's no music in the movie until Godzilla shows up.
Yes.
Oh, I never caught that. I didn't. Yeah,
there's nothing, and there's nothing until Godzilla shows up, and then you start to get a soundtrack to come through. But yeah,
which was a lot of Eva music.
You mean a lot of decisive battle specifically?
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes.
You know, it's one of those things that because I saw this before. I got the DVD of this or Blu-ray when it kind of came out in the US, so I saw it before Eva 4, because there's also some of the tracks that you hear in there, some of the newer ones that are remodeled and used in Eva, you know, 3.0 plus 1.0.
Oh,
most confusing to say name ever. You know, there's a lot of remix tracks from a bunch of the various original Godzilla productions. Mm-hmm. And if you, the soundtrack mm-hmm. is available on iTunes and or Apple Music and whatever for free. And it actually, it's very nicely listed out where it tells you each track and like what it's from, which is, which is pretty cool. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things I wonder about with Anno and Sagisu working together, where I almost wonder if it's, I could see it being a kind of a friendly competition almost, where Anno's like, okay, I'm going to use decisive battle here unless you can get me a better track.
Like one that fits better for the scenario. And then just use it.
And I could see Sagisu like working on it for a while. And sometimes I think he comes back with something that's better and cooler and is used for other things. But other times he's like, nope, I tried. I couldn't get something better than a new version of Decisive Battle. Because that song is just, it's such an S-tier track.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, I don't want to jump topic too far from production. But watching Shin Godzilla to me is probably, it felt like the closest we'll ever get to seeing like live action ever. As far as like, a lot of the direction choices, like a lot of the war room scenes that happen, and how Godzilla is portrayed, like, to me, like an angel, basically, in Eva, like how he appears and kind of initially recedes, and then they get that period of like, okay, it's away for now, but we have to plan for when he comes back. Like, they knew he'd be back. Like, it felt so much like an Eva angel, you know, angel attack sort of thing, minus the Evas, obviously. But
some of the shots of the tanks like turning and firing past really reminded me of End of Eva.
The way they sequence and like angle those shots, 100% agree, Mike. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like this was Anno test driving a little bit. Be like, if I did live action Eva, let's see how this would work. And honestly, I thought it was pretty amazing. Some of the choices. So.
Yeah, I think this is probably my favorite of the Shin movies, having seen them all fairly recently.
Yeah, I mean, I've only seen two so far, and this is definitely way better than
Kamen Rider.
Shin Kamen Rider.
Yeah, I agree. I like this a lot more than Kamen Rider. The flow was way better. The plot felt way more like well thought out, and like it was paced better than Kamen Rider was, in my opinion.
Some of that I think is that Godzilla has a more serious base to work from. Like, if you go all the way back to Godzilla 54, the original one, it's not what you think of when you think of a campy, cheesy kaiju at all. Like, it is a dead serious movie about, among other things, the horrors of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And having your city stomped by a dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go on a limb here. I'm a big Godzilla fan. I certainly have not seen everything, but I've seen a good number of them. I'm watching through some of them on a bunch of the older ones on Max. I've seen all of the new U.S. produced ones, which I think are actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it out there. This is my favorite Godzilla movie. I love this movie. I watched it like three or four times in the last month.
Wow.
I love it. I think it's a movie that just, it's probably my second favorite Anno-like movie, like next to End of Eva. It might very well be that. I just think it's done so well. Like, I agree. Like, the CGI like looks pretty good. There's a couple little spots in there that aren't like perfect, but between just like the soundtrack, the pacing, like, it's just one of those. I think it's just a fabulous film, and plus it's like, you know, it's such a post 3/11 earthquake movie that has a whole bunch of stuff related in there. But it's also just like, you could be like, well, it's the most Japanese movie ever. Why? Because the world is saved through competent bureaucracy, competent military and trains and construction equipment.
And cooperation amongst multiple different, like, you know, bureaucratic agencies.
And countries.
So everyone else can disagree and have a different one that they like more, but that's, I love this movie. I think it's fabulous.
I mean, I have not watched a Godzilla movie in an incredibly long time. I mean, I have not watched anything Godzilla related pretty much since like the kaiju versus kaiju days, so like Godzilla versus Mothra, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, like all those old classic like campy ones that were made, you know, many years ago. I haven't watched any of these Godzilla reboots since like the one in 2000, I want to say, that came out here in the States. I have not watched any of them. And this is the first like new Godzilla thing I've watched in probably pushing 30 years. And I liked it a lot. I am not like a Godzilla person anymore. I think there was a phase in my life where I was, but I can definitely say that this is easily one of my top two favorite Godzilla movies, but obviously my cross section's a lot narrower than Dylan's. So take that as you will. But
and mine's even narrower.
But I do agree with the comparison of this to, you know, Fukushima. Whereas the original, 54 Godzilla's had a lot of, you know, references to obviously, you know, like the bombs. So the horrors of nuclear war. So I think that this was a very intentional kind of like theme that on went for, and that's fine. I think it did a good job with it.
And they did pay reference to that, of course, in this movie too.
Oh yes. I felt a little cheated with the MacGuffin at the end of this magical element actually has a half-life of only, 10 years, so everybody will be okay. I'm like, sure, great, sure.
Yeah.
Let's be fair, that's an amazingly long half-life for something that's not already on the periodic table. Like, most new elements we discover don't last long at all.
They exist for, like, you know, fractions of milliseconds or something like that. Or the last three elements have been discovered, so I guess that's a good point.
Yeah, something they said the half-life was like a couple of months or something like
that.
It
was 20 days, I think.
Oh, is that how short it was?
Yeah, it was fairly short. But you're not wrong. Yeah, all those like high element number things or their half-life is usually like 4 milliseconds or something. In some crazy ways, too, like, you know, again, one of the things I think I liked about it, which was so bizarre, is that it was a nearly exactly 2 hour long movie, and gave you actually like a nice kind of like hopeful ending that was kind of happy.
Yeah,
for Anno.
You're like, true. What the heck? Like, that's crazy. I didn't know that he had that in him.
Yeah, so I guess we're naturally going there. So let's move over into the story section. I want to take a kind of contrary opinion, maybe, that I enjoyed this movie a lot. I think I like minus one more. I'm not sure yet. But I felt like this movie dragged a bit. Part of that may be the fact, like, I don't know which version. Did you guys all watch the Crunchyroll version or did you watch a different version?
I watched the C-roll.
That's where I watched it.
Yeah, I watched the Crunchy version, though I wish I had an imported Blu-ray that had the original Japanese text with proper subs.
Yeah, because that's what I was missing, where I was like, the titles for everything was not there. They were there as subtitles, and I don't know if it was related to that, but that was a lot of subtitle reading, and it was non-stop, basically, through the whole movie.
Would have helped if they had some additional styling to set those apart, like a different color or something.
Yes, because there were times when I didn't want to read them, but like I would just start reading them. And so like, if they were styled differently, it would have been a lot easier, or they put them a little bit separated. So maybe that contributes some to my kind of feeling like it dragged. But I did.
Let's be fair. It took all of Anno's creative camera angles to make a movie about a bunch of government meetings look vaguely interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they definitely helped a lot to make it very interesting. The setting and all that stuff was fantastic, typical Anno style. Like, I do want to mention that they even got a classic Anno shaky cam in the movie, which was great.
Which where you talk about like the opening with the on the boat on the
right on the boat. I feel like he's got to put that in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But to me, the best part about this movie is the bureaucracy. And I think that's what makes it so enjoyable. And that it, much like Godzilla Minus One, and maybe Dylan, you can tell me if this is the case or not, but I like how Minus One was not really about Godzilla. And same, I feel the same way about this movie, where it's not really about Godzilla. Godzilla is there as a kind of a plot device to tell this story about bureaucracy, right? Are other Godzilla movies typically like that? I
not
feel like
to the
they
same
would
degree,
be.
I don't think.
I mean, frankly, I haven't seen, you know, so many of them. They all get weird. There's Son of Godzilla, which I haven't seen yet, which is like super, super camp. But I feel like a lot of the better ones are about the people around Godzilla.
Yeah.
And it's because in some ways you could just say, well, it's hard to have a 2-hour movie that's an hour and a half with Godzilla, just from a budgetary perspective, but then also from a character, because you can't really have Godzilla sit there on a couch and go rah, 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 to a psychologist and have him tell him about why he's sad about eating all that radioactive waste.
I'd watch that.
I mean, that would be great, but probably not an hour and a half of that.
I mean, I think if
can
you
can it be animated
to.
In the style of The Critic? Because I would watch that.
Oh, man. Wow.
Whoa.
Man.
Deep cuts.
Sensei Mike dropping the John Lovitz mid-90s adult animation before adult animation was a term.
You want a real hot take? Oof. The Critic is, in my opinion, Matt Groening's greatest work. So.
All right, we're now a Simpsons podcast, guys. Let's go.
Keep us in apps for decades.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that Groening was involved in The Critic.
I think it's grading anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Let me fact check myself.
Okay.
Fact check.
It's probably right. Anyways, yes.
Yeah. So this movie, the kind of dark humor of the bureaucracy is just so great, where they're like,
everyone's trying to pass the buck. Yeah.
Well, that and just the kind of like, constant approvals for everything, where like they have the meeting so that they can have the meeting, and they get in the meeting and they're like, hey, don't talk about that. We keep minutes in this meeting. We have to go back to the other room now. And so they all get up and they go to the other room so they can go talk again.
And then they have the people sitting behind the people at the desk, which then get the information and then pass the card to the person sitting at the desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that they can read the card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So correction, the Critic hilarious. Is not Groening. It's Al Jean, who also worked on The Simpsons, but it's, but it had a lot of like, cast members like Nancy Cartwright's in it. Who's the voice of.
Yeah.
Simpsons,
and it was,
but yeah,
it's also Fox. I think it was the same time slot.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know,
and
next
the theme music written by Hans Zimmer.
Obviously.
Interesting.
Sure, that makes as much sense as the Simpsons theme music being written by Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, I'm not as super fan of it. I'm not sure exactly why I felt like it dragged a little bit. I have this feeling that it should have been a mini series, maybe.
I actually don't think it should have been a miniseries. I think Kamen Rider definitely should have been, but I feel like Godzilla was fine as a feature-length film. I just feel like so much of the plot development was... It would have been cool if we saw more than like them basically saying, oh, we just got the results back. It would have been cool if we could actually have seen some of the testing happen on the samples, for example. Like, where they were like, oh, we found this coagulation factor that might... do the trick, and it would have been cool to actually for them to cut to the BSL-4 lab that was doing that work and actually, like, you know, receiving the Godzilla sample and actually doing the testing on it, versus just them saying, oh, we got the results back and it works, this is how much we'll need. I'm like, oh,
I was thinking that like get that would give the breather that I was kind of
needing.
I
feel like just a bit too much of the movie was like basically talking heads in the war room.
Yeah. Which I enjoyed, but yeah, it was a lot.
A bit towards the end, I'd say by the last 20 minutes of the movie, I was pretty much had my fill of that part of it. But by that point, they were clearly speeding towards a solution or slash, you know, conclusion. So I was tolerating it. But for me, this movie started off very high, and then it was kind of a slow trickle down as far as, like, excitement.
Yeah, yeah, for reals, yeah. I don't feel too bad about criticizing it on these things, because it's still very strong.
For sure, definitely. At the end, I still enjoyed it, which, I'm not sure I can say the same thing about Kamen Rider. I can say that I'm glad I watched it, but I don't know if I can say I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other things that is always amusing to me is the English in the movie. tell me what you guys feel about this, but it felt to me like the lines were written in Japanese, translated by a native Japanese speaker into English, and then they just read that as their lines for English.
I don't know if it was quite that bad, but yeah, some of it was pretty... There were a few scenes where, especially the native English speakers they had on, like, speaking on camera, sounded okay. But the lines for, what was her name? The diplomat.
Pat?
Yeah.
Cat Patterson?
Patterson, yeah.
Kayoko on Patterson.
Yeah, where her English was... Oh, that was rough. And it's like, oh, come on, you're supposed to be Japanese-American, but obviously not, because the actress is completely Japanese. She even stated those English sections were the most stressful for her, because that was not something she's practiced. And so, you know, good on her for trying, but next time, maybe just try to find, like, an Asian-American to play the Asian-American role instead. But, you know,
I mean, Japanese producer. Ano should have just called up Hikaru Utada and just had her.
True. He has her number. I mean, she could probably swing it pretty easy.
Yeah,
she is flawlessly bilingual. So,
yeah, I mean, she was.
I will definitely agree that the English speaking in there is very jilted. Honestly, I think it sounded worse out of the native English speakers they had doing stuff.
Yeah,
at least with. With Kayoko, like, I don't know, it just kind of felt like, oh, it's like a Japanese person who's kind of speaking English but like the most of the English speakers that were speaking Japanese, they sounded like very awkward. I felt like, and maybe it's because I don't know German, but I felt like the Germans in the little scene where they go over to the German supercomputer lab or whatever, I felt like theirs felt a lot more natural sounding than the English one. That could possibly be just because I don't speak German.
I think so, because like for me, the English speakers, they sounded natural, but the words they were saying did not feel natural. It was weird. It's kind of awful, a little bit. I mean, definitely the worst was from the Japanese speakers, of course, but yeah, that's like a given. Again, not to like that it's made the movie really any worse. I mean, technically, yes, it made the movie worse, but like they tried, and I appreciate that.
And we've seen enough of the reverse that, you know, we are in no position to criticize.
Well, I'll criticize what I want.
Well,
but,
we can criticize what we want, but yeah, Hollywood's record on foreign language isn't great either.
Not great, for sure. Yeah, this is their revenge. So, yeah, the story didn't seem, the story itself was kind of weird at the end with the American military. Can somebody explain to me exactly? I kind of lost track of what the agreement was. Like, they were going to nuke Godzilla, and then they're like, don't nuke Godzilla. And then instead, their plan was to bomb it with the Predator drones and then crash trains into it and basically overheat it and something like,
yeah,
I missed the part where the Americans agreed.
They got the Americans to agree by pressuring, because it was a UN mandate to bomb to nuke Godzilla. They pressured the French and I think possibly some other members of the security council,
just the French,
but mainly the French, to delay the nuclear attack by 24 hours.
And that's
to
basically
give them time to attempt the coagulation plan.
And
yes, because they were trying to do Operation Yashiori, renamed from the Yaguchi plan to the Yashiori plan at that time, and they needed an extra 24 hours because effectively they'd been given 2 weeks' time, roughly, from the time that Godzilla did his initial, oh my goodness, atomic super sniper laser show.
Yeah.
Until they thought he was going to come back up. And then there is UN agreement, everything. We're going to nuke Tokyo. Sorry. Because people had already figured out at that point that Godzilla was going to be able to split out into smaller portions and go fly intercontinental and then spread across the globe. And so the Yashiori plan was involved with everything with the Predator drones, where yes, it was that they were trying to get those to fly in and effectively, yeah, see if they could wear out Godzilla and get him to kind of, I'm not sure whether you want to call it overheat or underheat or whatever, mm-hmm. just get tired of shooting his laser show.
This is getting to the pseudoscience of it, but I think the idea was they needed to freeze Godzilla, but in order to do that, they had to get its body temperature as low as possible, so they needed to expel as much nuclear energy with the drones as possible, and then that's
also they needed Godzilla to, you know, lie still so they could pump.
Right? Yeah, use cement trucks to pump the coagulant down its throat.
Yeah, so they definitely needed to tire Godzilla out before they could do that.
And the cement trucks that they use were very much literally the same Putzmeister 705s that were the ones that were literally used to pump cement into Fukushima Daiichi.
That makes total sense. Yeah, I was about to say that makes total sense.
Yep. If you look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's literally the exact same, like, super pumps that this German, now Chinese-owned, company has made to be able to do that stuff. Now, could they probably fly in at top speed and do some intense dental work? No, but, you know, we'll say that they can, because movie magic.
I really loved the way that whole plan played out, especially the train bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, so great.
I liked the second train bombs with them twisting all up as they exploded.
Yeah, and
in
like,
a way that
and like
kind
reaching
of,
like two-thirds of the way up Godzilla, basically.
That kind of reminded me of the... It's a deep cut, but because it's a Daikon reference, the opening to the Train Man live-action show that parodied the Daikon 4 opening, but using trains.
That is a deep cut.
We're gonna need a reference to that. I don't know what you're talking about.
I know Densho Otoko, but I don't know. I don't think I've watched the opening, or at least not in a long time. I when I saw the trains going, I was like, "Oh, what are they using these trains for? Are they gonna go deliver something or whatever?" And then
they're gonna deliver something.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh, okay."
They're gonna deliver trains full of Anfo, probably.
Yeah. And I guess the trains, there were two runs of trains, right? There was the first one, and then the second run. Where did those come from? Did they come from like the other side?
Yeah, I think like, so. Yeah. Well, the first one were all the Shinkansen tracks, and then the others would have been on the local tracks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's true, and that's what they were as well. Because the first ones were definitely Shinkansen, and the other ones were subway trains.
Okay. That makes sense, because my first thought was like, wait, didn't
and
they blow
it
up the tracks?
It makes sense or... you'd use the faster ones first when Godzilla was highest energy.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, I hadn't think about that, yeah. Even smarter, man. Anno is really planning it out.
Oh, man.
Shockingly, Anno put a lot of thought into train stuff in his show.
Yeah, I know, I am shocked
everyone's super surprised. Honestly, I think this might have been the Anno production with the least amount of... power lines.
Oh, yeah.
True. On the other hand, they made up for it with some great Anno particle effects, even though they replicated them in CG.
Oh, yeah, for the beam stuff?
Well, that and just the destruction of the buildings. Like, Anno does it in a certain way that very much reminds me of the way he animates destruction of the buildings by hand. You know, where there's just a whole bunch of debris flying everywhere that you... don't usually see in most other effects quite to the same extent.
I mean, I just assume they're just using physics simulations on these things and demolishing buildings, but yeah, maybe he went in there and told them to, no, I want more pieces. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, 11. It was always some of my favorite hand animation that he did was when he was drawing something just being totally destroyed into pieces, or like the ice falling off the rocket in Royal Space Force, or other things like that. Like, he just could keep track of particles like no other animator I remember.
Definitely a flex for sure, like that guy.
So, since we're talking about the final scene, I have a question for the rest of you. So, pretty much the final cut of the movie is them kind of zooming up on Godzilla, and then it slowly tracks up his tail.
Oh, yeah.
And at the very tip of the tail, you see what's very clearly small creatures, for lack of a better term, that seem
to
be...
look humanish?
Yeah, kind of human, like almost like xenomorph-esque in some ways, the way the teeth looked. And and they were kind of crawling up and out of the tail. And I want to hear what you all think that's like inferring.
Yeah.
Mine is that that's the next evolution of Godzilla, and they talk about it as like that's the fear that Godzilla is going to then next evolve into smaller creatures that could fly intercontinentally. And so that was Godzilla nearly evolving into the next state where he was going to split out and go into like 800 million small intercontinental xenomorph Godzilla terrors, which will then be completely unstoppable.
I figured it was something. I felt like they, like that's totally possible. But I feel like the way they dealt with that earlier in the movie was just saying that he was going to sprout wings and move, or I guess, and they had the other smaller things. That wasn't super clear to me, the smaller Godzillas, but it feels like a weird thing to put in the end if that's what they mean, because they're human-like, and that wasn't touched on. But I mean, I guess it would kind of make sense, but it just, the way it's put there in almost like sequel-esque style, it's kind of felt like they were hinting at something else. Like, was this another case of the ending of Kamen Rider, where like it feels like they had a sequel in mind, or at least they wanted to leave the door open, so they did that?
I'm kind of thinking, that's kind of what I was thinking, was the possibility of leaving room for a sequel, even if it never happens?
I don't think so.
No?
Just because I feel like a lot of Godzilla movies kind of end that way, where they almost end kind of sequel-y, but it's never really super clear that it's even going to go that way or not. It's not like the ones back in the 60s and 70s had a real, they weren't doing like the GCU, the Godzilla Cinematic Universe plot for 15 years or whatever. They're just like, all right, well, we'll kind of leave maybe something. I don't know. Where are we going to go with this? I don't know. Besides, also the thing in Godzilla that's always like the biggest threat is not Godzilla, it's always the people.
Yes.
So what would be the most threatening mutation, next form of mutation of Godzilla, is to become more like people.
That's an interesting take, indeed. Yes, I think you're totally right on that, though. Like, in the movies, it's the people that are the problem, right? Like, in this one, it was like the people wanting to, you drop the bomb, or like the government's not cooperating, and all this stuff. Like, yeah. Interesting.
The first prime minister, who's hilariously competently incompetent.
Yeah, did not want to make decisions.
Okay. Yeah, the second one at least knows he's in over his head and clearly does his best with that. But
I love the part where he's like, oh man, my noodles got soggy. I knew this job wasn't going to be easy. like half of Tokyo has been decimated by this unstoppable force. He's like, my noodles.
I guess I have to do this. Yeah, that guy very much knew that, yeah, he was going to be there just for a short time. So, in a way, that makes him kind of heroic, right? Like, I mean, he's basically doing the, making all the tough calls that people don't want to make, but He also knows he doesn't have to worry about the... Well, he knows he's going to take the fall later, so I guess he's pre-accepted his punishment.
Yeah. And in some ways, you know, they kind of say at the end, too, they're like, nope, that was his plan, was to, like, once we get through just this initial passing of bills, that the whole cabinet's going to resign. Like, it's fine. That's what it should happen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like parliamentary systems have some advantages in dealing with situations like that. Like, we're just kind of stuck with the government until the next scheduled election.
Yeah, Japan has their interesting, culture, I guess you would call it, of resignation for a way to accept responsibility for things, which, yeah, not something you see in the West.
True,
but caretaker governments are a thing in parliamentary systems in general, though.
What things?
Like a coalition caretaker government type thing in the midst of a major emergency is definitely a thing in parliamentary systems. I do not want to open this bag of worms, but take a look at Israel for an example of one currently.
Back to the movie. I want to go to like what I think is actually is it's this a little thing, but I think it might actually be kind of my favorite interaction in the movie. Is when Ogashira, the female super scientist who was nominated for the fourth Japanese Academy film for best supporting actress role. Shin Godzilla won best picture, best director. It was outstanding cinematography. It won for that. Outstanding lighting. It won for a ton of stuff. Outstanding art direction, film editing, other stuff. The other film that was a big one that same year that was nominated for stuff was Your Name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they both came out in the same year. But anyways, my favorite little scene is... when Ogashira says, you know, what if he's powered by nuclear stuff? And where their scientist is kind of like chuckling, he's kind of like, wait, no, that can't be. Like, that's ridiculous. And then a couple minutes later, they figure yes. They're like, oh my God, it is. And it, like, he actually says, he's like, you're right. I'm sorry. Like, I was like, it was just this very like human thing of this guy, scientist, you know, person who's like, nope, actually, you're right. I really liked that. For whatever reason, I felt like the delivery and everything was very well done there, too.
It was a nice contrast, I guess, to the other thing that was going on, where they're like, the scientists tell us that it's got fin legs, so obviously it can't stand up, it would collapse. And they're like, no, I don't think so, are you sure? No, yeah, it has fin legs, that can't happen. And then they get the footage of it standing up, and it's like, okay.
While he's in the middle that's of the impossible. Press conference, having just said it couldn't go on land.
Well, they said, like, there's no way that it can make landfall because it would be crushed under its own weight. And then literally, as he's saying that, it makes landfall, even though it's kind of squirming along like a giant, like, grub.
And this is after, just before the press conference, right, they told him, just stick to the facts, don't say anything else. And then he says that, and they're like, we told you, just stick to the facts. That was a really great moment. Anybody else have actually any? We're coming up close to the end here, but does anybody else have any favorite moments? This movie does have a lot of good ones. Like Mike, do you have any good ones that you remember?
I'm trying to think what my favorites are. Like, if I have any favorites that we haven't mentioned, honestly, I like how it opens just with that disaster in the tunnel and. Doesn't show you much of Godzilla for almost half the movie.
Oh yeah, that was good too. Yeah, and I guess if you have any final thoughts too, now's a good time to say that too.
And I guess the one thing also that I mentioned just randomly in the Discord that I caught Anno using a background track that he's obviously been thinking about for a while in the ending credits that I assume is from one of the Godzilla movies that he used as the BGM for one of his student anime of, like, this Tough Tires fake commercial or something of this car, and it involves a bunch of particle effects and destruction, of course, because Anno.
Yes. Mm-hmm, of course.
So, and that's, you know, shows that he has been thinking about that piece of music and using it for at least 40 years.
You know, you saying that reminds me of, I think we were talking about earlier with Dylan saying that him challenging Sagisu by putting in Decisive Battle, unless he can come up with a better one. And I wonder if some of this is, what is the thing that the directors do in Hollywood where they like put in temp music? I think it's called just temp music. And then sometimes that stuff sticks.
That famously happened with 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, yeah, right. Anyways, yeah, just came into my head here with that mention there, Mike. What about you, Nick? Favorite scene, final thoughts?
Yeah, favorite scene for me is kind of a weird one, but I think it was pretty early on when they were, maybe in the midpoint, when the U.S. diplomat first appeared, and she kind of gave some background dossier on, like, the missing, you know, researcher or whatever, and how they already had a name for the creature. And this is where, I want to say, one of the first times where you see in a Japanese Gojira movie, they actually use the Romanized Godzilla name.
Oh,
and he's,
yeah.
And even inferred, like, they even had the name God put into the name for, and they gave me some BS, you know, reason behind it. But, and then they had the kanji for it, and, you know, they're reading Gojira. And so that's when they, you know, started referring it to as Gojira. But I want to say this is one of the first times where you see in a Japanese made Godzilla movie, you actually hear the term Godzilla actually being used.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, the Godzilla was originally just my understanding, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was originally just a thing that the American versions made up just from the pronunciation. And this is like maybe the first time it's gone the other way.
It's almost them trying to like retcon it as like canonical. Yeah. Like it's actually either, because, you know, it depends on how you read the name in either in, you know, English or in the kanji form. So I thought that was a pretty interesting way of them paying homage to the history of the name of the creature, even across cinema.
And it's also kind of funny that the Godzilla name also comes from the Americans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah,
in the
right,
movie,
sure.
It comes from the Americans back in there.
But aside from that, closing statements, yeah, overall, I know we talked a lot about what was wrong with the movie, but I think it was because it was overall quite an enjoyable movie. I thought it was really well done, really thought the CGI, this is some of the best CGI work I've seen on put into a movie, period.
I mean, the CGI wasn't transparent, but it was, it didn't break immersion and disbelief.
Exactly. Like, especially when Godzilla decides to go full, you know, super nuke mode. Like, those effects to me looked really clean. I was like, wow, this actually looks good. And it fit, like, they made it look just campy enough that it was a throwback kind of to old Godzilla, but it was still very clearly intended to be very menacing seeming. Like, you see these lasers come out of his fins and they freaking slice a B-2 bomber in half. I'm like, holy crap. Yeah.
And then, you know, some buildings.
And then the choppers and all that. I'm like, wow, okay, Anno, you got my attention again. Jeez. So, yeah. Overall, great job. Yeah, one of my out of the Shin series, the favorite I've seen out of the two. But this one was considerably better, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Yeah. Good. Dylan, favorite scene, final thoughts? I guess you did say one. You got another favorite scene and then some final thoughts?
No, I love it, and the soundtrack's available, and it does a good job at listing where stuff comes from, so you should listen to the soundtrack. There's tons of great tracks on there, picking out from Godzilla history.
Good to know. Not necessarily one favorite scene, but what I really love that the movie does is shows you, like, at least a little of the army of unseen workers necessary to set up all these meetings and get things in order.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all the equipment that's needed, and that's where, you know, it implies that that's where the real power comes from, is the armies of people behind the people, not necessarily the people themselves.
Yes.
I want to cut back in with another thing, which is just, like, I love the, I love how the JSDF is in this movie, because they are really, you can, like, I think it's so great because they should come off as this really, like, competent force that comes up against something they just can't beat. They literally just, like, we did everything we could. Like, they executed things correctly, efficiently, did everything they could. And then they're like, well, we can't do this, so what are we going to do? Well, let's help people get the heck out of the city. And then they, you know, keep trying and doing stuff. And I like it that they were a competent professional military. And they weren't super soldiers. Mm-hmm. And they weren't a bunch of bumbling idiots. It was like, oh yeah, no, these guys are competent professionals. And I felt like that's a very nice, interesting perspective.
Yeah.
They weren't like evil or anything, you know, trying to take over. They're like, no, they're just, they're trying to do the best they can and help. So anyways.
Yeah. Just doing their job. Just, yeah, that was nice. I don't think I have a favorite scene, but Mike did mention stuff that I thought was remind me of. One of my favorite little bits is when they are setting up. I can't remember which area. I think it's basically the big conference room, and they wheel in all the equipment, and then in a typical Ondo shot of like a, you see a row of copy machines getting pushed into place. Mm-hmm. I just love that whole scene of them setting up the room. Because yeah, it kind of exemplifies the bureaucracy and the machinery that the bureaucracy requires to get its job done.
And even though they're setting up for this flat, no nonsense, like everything's open task force, they still need all of that machinery to, even for that, they need all those mm-hmm. copy machines.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought that was great. I think Honor does a good job of showing that kind of stuff. And yeah, as much as I, you know, would criticize the movie, like Nick says, it's still a great movie. I've only seen, same as Nick, only the two Shin movies so far, and this one is by far the better movie. I recommend everybody see it. And so to end things here, I will remind everybody again, go see the End of Eva movies in theaters. If you have a chance, if this comes out in time, and our next episode will be about the television series, anime series, Shin Sekaiori from the New World. And that is on Crunchyroll if you want to watch along. But go quickly because it's a 26-episode series. Or read a synopsis and then enjoy the podcast with us. So with that, this is AMO Kenzoku signing off. Ba-da-ba.